From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic book of the month on Southside Broadcasting. Crime writer. That means she authors the crimes. She's the mastermind behind the crimes. Oh, is this recording?
This month's book is Who'd Have Thought It by Christine Weber. Who'd Have Thought It marks Christine Weber's return to fiction after a break of almost 30 years. A noted broadcaster on both radio and television, she's also a practicing psychotherapist and draws on this for much of her writing. Who'd Have Thought It follows Annie Templeton, a doctor whose husband has left her for a younger woman. Faced with making a new life for herself in her 50s, Annie draws her remaining family and friends around her as she prepares to embrace her single status. She believes that an important part of this is finding a new partner, something she's developing an interest in after a year of being alone. And the search for a suitable companion is one of the main threads in the novel. Weber also tackles some of the issues surrounding fractured families and the difficulties faced by many families following a divorce.
Annie felt different, but was not sure why. The alarm had gone off as usual at 6:30, and she wished, as she invariably did, that she could stay in bed a while longer. Rolling onto her back, she looked up at the ceiling, then down to the floor, then to the left and right. Everything in her bedroom appeared normal. In fact, exactly the same as it had when she had returned from Venice 1 year and 13 days ago. She stretched further down the bed, trying to capture and identify this elusive sense that something had changed. Then she blushed as she remembered her dream. She had been in her surgery, seeing a stream of well-spoken men in beautiful suits. It was hard to remember who they were exactly, but as she had rather a penchant for television journalists, perhaps one of them had been Dermot Murnaghan or Gavin Esler. But when she had buzzed in her next patient, instead of undressing himself, he had begun to remove her clothes. Her pulse quickened as she recalled the agreeable encounter she had enjoyed with her long-term hero and fantasy figure, Patrick Pace. So that was different. And there was something else. She had woken with no sense of regret about the past. Instead, for the first time since Edward had rejected her, she felt that her future was promising. Janie would be pleased. Her best friend had been telling her for months how it was so trendy to be single in midlife that the Department for Work and Pensions had created an acronym, SWOFTY, meaning Single Women Over 50. According to Janie, who had seen an item on BBC's Breakfast, SWOFTYs were all out there and living for today and having a ball. Suddenly, Annie liked the idea of being one of them. She climbed out of bed and padded over to the windows before drawing back the curtains to reveal a grey and drizzly day. A lone cyclist rode by on the village street below. Despite his waterproofs, Annie was able to make out the tall, fit outline of Rupert, the husband of her friend Diana. He biked to the station every morning en route to his desk in Whitehall. Rather him than me, she thought, as she decided that her own cycle would remain in the garage today. The phone rang. She reached for the handset from the small table beside her.
Weber is a prolific writer of non-fiction books, having produced a dozen in the years separating her first novel, In Honour Bound, from Who'd Have Thought It. Her experience as therapist and agony aunt is apparent in the subjects that range from How to Mend a Broken Heart to Get the Happiness Habit. This assertion of positive thinking permeates Who'd Have Thought It, and there are a couple of sections where she slips a little into a more non-fiction style, when describing the symptoms of ovarian cancer, for example. Generally, however, this book is successful in its storytelling, and there are flashes of humour throughout.
By 8 o'clock the following morning, Annie was halfway down the M11, Being Saturday, there was no commuter traffic, and she was making swift progress on her journey to London. She had had no difficulty in leaving home early because her eureka moment of the evening before had robbed her of sleep. All her usual wind-down routines, hot milk and even hotter bath, and drops of lavender oil on the pillow, had failed to relax her. Eventually, sometime after 2, she had dozed for a while, but her slumber had been laced with terrifying dreams, so once daylight had dawned, she had abandoned her bed. During the long hours of worry, she had decided that she must talk to Janie as soon as possible, but in person, rather than on the phone. Her friend had said that she was going to write 2 articles over the weekend, so she should be at home. But what time might she be up and at her desk? In the old days, Annie had known Janie's routine almost as well as her own. Customarily, her friend would rise early and work hard throughout an extended morning, then take a nap before continuing to write, and then going out to eat or drink or both. How much had her schedule altered to accommodate Miguel? Did he sleep late? It seemed likely, as he taught in the evenings and probably ate dinner afterwards. Could she, or should she, speak frankly in front of him? And if not, where could she and Janie have this vital conversation? She adjusted her position slightly, then raised and dropped her shoulders a couple of times in an attempt to ease the tension in her neck and back. The car seats were normally comfortable, but today everything hurt. She loved this little Fiat, having traded in her Picasso people carrier a few months ago. She should have done it before. It had been years since she had been required to ferry her girls to school or to discos, but for a while she had needed a vehicle with sufficient space to convey them back and forth to university. Even that had stopped now. Alice had her own car, and Lucy always seemed to have a devoted boyfriend who wanted to transport her and her considerable baggage to and from Sussex. Realising that she was no longer the first-choice chauffeur had been a slightly painful discovery. It had been one of those landmark stages, such as the day when your child stops wanting a hug at the school gates, or refuses to hold hands when crossing a road. Mixed feelings, she mused, are an integral part of motherhood. The old car had also played a part in her marriage, as it had been her role to drive Edward back from any function or dinner party they had attended together, so that he could drink as much as he wanted, which was usually a lot. She could not imagine him poured into this petite and pretty vehicle with its cream paintwork, white steering wheel, and scarlet fascia in a bus holstery. Doubtless he would consider it cramped and frivolous, but it suited her. She cast her mind back to the day when she had eased Diana into the passenger seat and then learned of her marital crisis. Though barely 2 months had elapsed, it was obvious that the situation between Diana and Rupert had become less dramatic and that, in time, some sort of new normality would emerge. So it probably followed that eventually Janie's crisis would gain a new perspective, though she wished she could feel optimistic about its outcome.
Dr. Annie Templeton's dilemma is not unique, though perhaps not as common as the reader might believe from the book. Despite the serious subject underlying the narrative, this is a very positive and upbeat novel, as is to be expected from the author's other works. The setting is well drawn and gives a realistic and evocative picture of East Anglia, and especially of the city of Cambridge. Annie Templeton is a strong character, sure of herself and capable of coping with most of life's challenges. Whether it is a sick friend, an abusive patient, or a difficult daughter, she is steadfast and up to the task, and it shall come as no surprise that she is triumphant in all things by the end. Billed as a romantic comedy, it was perhaps less comedic than I expected, but nevertheless, it is a good contemporary example of the genre.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. Radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you fancy a film, we have over 80 great films to choose from, to suit all ages and all film tastes. Why not check out the free film trailers and see if there's anything you fancy? If the latest blockbuster film isn't your thing, then how about one of our classic films, such as The Great Escape, Rain Man, or Some Like It Hot?
250.
250?
Yeah.
You're crazy. You ought to be locked up. You too. 250 guys just walking down the road just like that.
Of course, I'm an excellent driver.
You know how to drive?
Yeah.
Rain Man! You never touch the steering wheel when I'm driving. Do you hear me?
Of course, I don't have my underwear.
To find out more about Bedside Entertainment Services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the Bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial *800.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at Superhero IRL. Thanks so much.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialize in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit ManilaPR.com now.
Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
Very true. And she's back after a few months sabbatical, during which time Rob capably stepped in to do one of the Book of the Month critiques. Well done, Rob.
Well, it's a brilliant book.
Exactly. And curiously written by Jenny Finch as well.
Yes.
And, of course, I also tried to evoke the ghost and the spirit of Jenny's writing from the point of view of the Dayton Ward Elusive Salvation that we did over in Blackpool. So after those sort of little trips on the road, so to speak, and internally, Jenny has, as you've probably already guessed if you've been listening to the first 13 minutes of this particular podcast, arrived back and has had the delight of a book which has been on hold since actually you returned, Jenny, because it was originally being mooted as a July book and so on, but here we are in December, and who'd have thought it?
Well, yes, who'd have thought it? It's very much a summer book, so it was a bit strange reading it coming down through the winter. But no, it was an interesting read. It's not something I would normally have selected, and so it's good to expand your horizons.
When I was first privileged enough to actually receive a copy of Who'd Have Thought It, I must admit, I thought, this is not really my territory at all. This is something that I don't say I felt awkward or I needed to get in touch with my feminine side. But I did think, I don't know. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. Rob, what did you make of it?
Well, that's exactly what I thought as well. Everything about it, being set in Cambridge, etc. I did really enjoy it, and I read it. I just kept picking it up. I couldn't put it down, in other words.
There were a few unputdownable, to use that portmanteau of a phrase. There were a few wonderful aspects which I thought really captured the spirit of Cambridge in the 1980s when I was there, and I think Christine did an excellent job in terms of that. But there was also a couple of LOL moments, and I'll use the vernacular once again.
Ooh, very good.
Which were the internet dating ones. I thought they were, again, so true to life, not from personal experience, he hastens to add, but the sort of aspect that's there, and also the kind of caveat against going online and using things like Tinder or indeed other dating sites to effectively work our way through this. So I gather that the current vernacular phrase, or the popular phrase, is cuffing for people who normally prefer single life but over the winter months feel that they should actually be tied into a long-term relationship.
Cuffing,
that's the initial line.
All right. Yeah.
So I have this from the Tinder sociologist who we were featuring a few weeks back. Again, just an interesting sort of routine. You can check out the other podcasts with respect to that whole thing.
Okay.
Laura Trevino, I believe her name was, but there we are. No cuffing in Christine, we just thought it. Characterization, how did you feel that the work of Annie Templeton was developed? Because, I mean, she goes through that whole routine of a kind of standard story in many ways, where you think, okay, the husband has left, traded her in for what he perceives as a younger model. There are lots of... Even in the days where, here we are, second decade of the 21st century, we still maintain that, you know, we need to get away from these kind of cliched views. But the, you know, that sort of pattern was, it was not unique. It was happening on a regular basis.
Well, yes, and still is. I think her characterisation of Annie Templeton is very strong, and that underpins the whole of the book itself. I felt in some ways the women were better drawn than the men. I don't think the men were terribly sympathetic, although some of them didn't deserve to be very sympathetic, to be honest.
I couldn't find any male characters, really, that I bonded with at all. The person that she sort of...
ends up with,
exactly.
Yes. Let's not spoil it.
Spoilers? Jenny, please. In addition to that, I think the characterisation of the slightly chronologically gifted... practitioner partner who is the female, I think that was quite interesting.
Yes.
In terms of the sort of response, and I could certainly see some interesting characters emerging should a televisual or filmic version be made of this. Rob, any other sort of highlights that you spoke? I mean, you mentioned obviously Cambridge, mentioned the onset of Annie Templeton and her travel and traumas through the whole thing. How do you feel she sort of relates to the family that was there? Because obviously the two daughters.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that with their divided sympathies and whatever, the way that the family splits apart and she tries to bring it together and tries to stand up for herself. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought again the liaison with friends, they were sort of well framed, well put together. Festive period, I think the Christmas period for me, that was probably one of the weakest sort of areas. I did feel that was a bit forced, not from Christine's point of view, but from the point of view of the characters. They seem to be desperately trying to have. And we are in that time where you sort of, if you're not having a good time, you clearly are Billy No Bates or Johnny No Mates. It's just, you know, alone at Christmas. No. Just seen a video that's actually focused by Gary Curtis entitled Nobody Should Be Alone at Christmas, almost as it's a command.
Yes.
And the video actually features zombies. I don't know.
Really?
Exactly.
It's just Zombie Christmas.
Yeah. Anyway, Jenny, if we were actually looking at a filmic version of this, who'd have thought it? Who would you see as kind of useful characters, or who would you see as Dr. Annie Templeton?
Ooh.
It's kind of putting you in the position William Coles was put in. Janet McTeer. All right.
You need that height, and she's got that... almost ramrod posture, and you have a feeling that this is a woman who's holding herself together very, very firmly, because in a lot of ways she's sure she's going to fly apart otherwise. And I think she'd do it very well.
My choice would be Caroline Goodall. Kind of similar reasons. But I think she'd probably be just slightly better in terms of the...
A little more sympathetic, maybe.
Yeah, although have you seen her in Hook?
Oh, this is true.
Schindler's List? Anyway, that's great stuff there. And Rob... would this switch you into the genre of romantic comedies, or is it a case of, well, I've tried it, but I'm not necessarily going to be sort of easing, I'll stick with my historical epics?
I have tried it now. I'm not sure whether I'm going to switch full time.
We'll see. Well, I mean, again, the updated version of How to Mend a Broken Heart, I actually have in the back of the studio here, just as a sort of regular lean-to, if needs be, because it's always, you never know when you might need Christine Webber's advice. So we'll flick through on that basis. If we push to the notion of marks out of 10, I know we hate this sort of particular aspect and so on, but Rob, where would you go?
I'm going to go for 8.
Mm-hmm. Jenny?
I'm going to go for 7.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go 8.5. Because I think it merits that whole sort of sequence. I think there are lots of solid things. Would we like to see a sequel to Annie Templeton? I mean, there's always that line there in terms of what happens next.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is a sort of positive narrative trope. And Jenny, you're well known for sequels, as the ongoing scenario of Alex Hastings sort of shows us as she heads across the country and to who knows where.
Well, yes, who can tell?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a sequel from your own point of view, do you think it would be worthwhile? I mean, obviously it would be in the 90s, it would be a case of a different sort of perspective, presumably. Or?
Possibly. She's done a very good job of tying all the loose ends up and making a nice fringe at the end. And so she'd have to unknot a few bits and pieces. But let's face it, life comes unknotted all the time.
Mm.
I must mention, of course, her a description of the radio experiences that the novel goes through. The heroine, Dr. Annie Templeton, goes through very, very close to life. And I think, obviously, Christine drew on her own experience, including the fact of the BBC local radio people who actually sort of have the clipboards almost fixed physically to their persons as they're rushing around just trying to get people in on various ways. Oh, that was a really good sort of piece of that, which is probably why I get the 8.5 from that point of view. Mm-hmm. And Rob, would a sequel? Do you think a sequel would be a possibility?
Yeah, why not? It would be quite good fun to, as Jenny said, unpick all those knots and go into another decade. And yeah, absolutely.
Who'd have thought it? Templeton Strikes Back.
Ooh. There you go. You've done the hard bit already, Alex.
Next up, we're well into the festive mood, it would seem, Jenny, because you've gone for a completely different festive an approach to whole things. Sadly, from an author who's no longer with us. He's in the great disc world beyond, and that's a major clue that's been given away from that point of view. Thanks. Would you like to share what our next book of the month, which will be coming up actually in a couple of weeks' time, because we're squeezing in a couple of last sort of mini package here, and also we didn't think it was right, Rob, to actually start talking about a Christmas-themed novel in February or January.
Well, yes. And to help celebrate Christmas in a way that I feel is really the true spirit of Christmas, we're going to have the wonderful Terry Pratchett's marvellous Hogfather.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting.